Reading from the Srihad Bhagavatamrita, chapter 6, text 73 and 75. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Daksulam Mulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadhamayam Vidati Sapadantikam Vairagya Yudhvakti Vrishampayatnai Apayama Manadipsumandam Satamdhiyya Paradruka Dhuki Sanatanasam Padamastriyami Sancha Kaupa Tarup Yascha Vipashindhu Vaivacha Satitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from the Sant Falls, where I'm staying. So we'll read from text 73. Padmavat Yuvacha Vayanu Tayanita Yate Krishna Katamma Mantritam Shrinu Yadika Dasabir Vashar Nandagopasya Mandire. Padmavati said, Krishna, why should you lament? Just listen to my advice. While living 11 years in the home of Nandagopa, you two brothers enjoy various comforts. For that I swear my husband will repay Nanda twice over. My husband will see to it that Gargamuni calculates the amount to the smallest fraction and delivers it by his own hand. And if Nanda owes you payment for tending his cows, let him pay you or not as he wishes. Commentary, for 11 years, Ugrasena's grandson, Krishna, lived and enjoyed in the house of Nanda Maharaj. Krishna might not take seriously Padmavati's idea to reimburse Nanda Maharaj and satisfy him with money. But even if Krishna becomes amused by it, her purpose of changing Krishna's mood will be achieved. She reminds Krishna that her husband, Ugrasena, is very generous, and will not hesitate to pay twice whatever might be owed. And even if Nanda fails to remunerate Krishna, and Balaram for their cow tending, that is a small concern. In settling the accounts, Nanda may not want to accept anything extra from Ugrasena, and that will be all the better. So there's no need to annoy Nanda Maharaj over the small amount for the salaries of Krishna and Balaram. Gargamuni is the best person to calculate the payment because he is an excellent astrologer accustomed to making careful mathematical reckonings of configurations of planets. Moreover, though not saying so, Padmavati thinks that if the scrupulous Bharga decides the amount to pay and delivers it himself, the cowherds will not get more than they deserve. So since Nanda is only a cowherd, he is not used to having much wealth other than his stock of milk products. The expenses for the two brothers should be repaid, but not those of Rohini and the maidservants who had stayed with her in Braja, because she had insulted Padmati by ignoring her previous comments. So we're in this part of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita where Krishna is, Uddhava had arrived. And Narada Muni had arrived on his journey to find the topmost devotee. And what a wonderful journey. To meet and hear from someone who is detached and selfless, and therefore is in a position to see and communicate truth. You can be a great scholar, but if you're not in the right perspective, you won't see the truth. The right perspective to see the truth, or the platform of truth, is detachment and selflessness. Because that's our natural position as a particle of consciousness, of the Supreme Consciousness, meant for the service of the Supreme Consciousness. We can only see that. We can only see God and ourselves if we're not averse to God, if we're not trying to be the enjoyer and controller. That's Sambandhigyan. Sambandhigyan means the proper metaphysical knowledge is so related to your perspective on things. Our metaphysical knowledge in Vaishnavism is to see the proper, to see God, reality, and reality is God and God's energies. And to see them properly, you have to understand the relationship between them. So if you think you're the body, you're in the wrong lokasthane, you're in the wrong position. You don't understand that relationship between the body. Understanding that the body's a vehicle, it's not the self. And if you don't understand your relationship with God, you may think you're God, or deny God, and not understand that relationship, you will not see reality. And God's relationship with matter, if you think that God is matter, you will not see reality. So the platform to see reality is a platform of detachment and selflessness where you are happy to be God's servant, where you don't have to deny the reality of the absolute truth, and you don't have to assume a false conception of the body to enjoy and control the world. So a person who actually understands that and sees that very, very carefully and can communicate that carefully and exemplifies that carefully, that's the type of person we want to associate with. If we want ourselves to have those qualities. Because it's also a position of selflessness and devotion and love. That's the position we want. So we have Narada on this journey wanting to associate with devotees and real devotees, not just an allegiance, a acceptance of some philosophical understanding, but people who are actually selfless and pure. So we know that he's searching for Uddhava, who has a tremendous reputation because outside of Vrindavan, he's the one that entered into Vrindavan and actually saw the pinnacle of that selflessness and purity in terms of the gopis. And therefore, I just spit something. Anyway, when he comes, Krishna is sleeping. Not sleeping, he's lying on the porch in the palace of Dwarka. Cloth is over his head. It appears to be some kind of mental disturbance even. And Uddhava, when Narada glorifies him in his search, Uddhava begins to speak briefly about the gopis, and then there ensues a discussion of why Krishna did not go back to see them. I want to point to another thing because that's important to really appreciate what we're going to be reading in the next few sessions. I'm not going to start because I really like that comment when we were discussing the passing away of Sripad Iyengar Prabhu and trying to understand how such a great soul died in such a way. And Rupi Krishna made the question, what is the internal story? So here you have to enter into the internal story to understand these pastimes. And the internal story is the soul's unbounding love and devotion to the Supreme Lord and the Supreme Lord's unbounding love and devotion for his devotees. And a world that moves externally in many ways, but has the unified objective of increasing devotion, and therefore increasing ultimate happiness. And that's the conception of the absolute reality, that it's this ocean of happiness, of the loving exchange, eternally and very intensely, that the ultimate reality is intensely happy and intensely feeling love. And those who understand the absolute reality, they also share in the same way, in this kind of lila or pastime. So this lila, this shakti, this potency, is just moving to facilitate a wonderful feeling of love, as Prabhupada would sometimes joke. You know, the absolute reality is not static, it's ecstatic. So it's a conception of the absolute reality that's very personal, very, very dynamic, with pastimes or lilas that allow the absolute reality to enjoy love. It's not imposing a conception that we have of activity and relationship here in this world and projecting it on the absolute reality. Rather, in this conception, what's here is a reflection of that reality, but tinged with different degrees of selfishness. So this is what's happening internally. And there's disagreements, but it's all based on affection and love. It's all based on affection and love. So now we'll get to the section that we're up to now. Krishna awakes and he's feeling the separation from the residents of Vrindavan. And the main question that's going to be focused here The main question that's going to be answered in these sections is, why Krishna didn't return back to Vrindavan. And because externally it may look like he's cruel, and that may give doubts about the exalted position of Krishna. Even the fact, how can he be divine if he's cruel? Because they're suffering so intensely. And yet Krishna hasn't returned. Even though people have implored him to return, Rohini had implored him to return, Balaram had implored him to return, Uddhava implored him to return, but Krishna hasn't returned. So there's discussion about this going on between the residents of Dwarka, especially the ones that are close to Krishna and had some access, had come from Vrindavan itself. But why Krishna hasn't returned to Vrindavan if he actually claims to have affection for the residents of there? Why hasn't he come? Rohini and Balaram's mother they're arguing that Krishna, anyway, I'm trying to remember, I can't remember the details, but I guess anyway, eventually when this goes on, then he wakes up and then he admits that his heart is like diamond, solid diamond, hard. Hard heart means it doesn't move by feelings. And a great person, he feels for others. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, what's the essence of religion? Jiva Doi. The heart feels for the jiva. The essence of religion is the heart feels. Tears come to the eyes. The Bhagavatam says in the second canto, if the heart, upon hearing the holy name, doesn't melt, then it is steel framed. In fact, the definition of the highest condition of the heart, it's described like butter. It melts, bhava. The heart is softened by various tastes. The heart is softened by the desire to be with Krishna. The heart is softened by the desire to serve Krishna. So softened by these tastes. So why is, so Krishna's admitting that. But then he reveals his heart. He realizes they're suffering so much. And then he asks Uddhava what to do. Because after all, he's in Dwarka. And if he says, I shall go back, the people will be very, very hurt because they love him so much in Dwarka. So he asks Uddhava. You know everything. Tell me what I should do. Krishna was lamenting that devotees, they took care for me. I haven't forgotten. I must help them. It's cruel to cause such gentle souls such extreme grief. He says to Uddhava, tell me what I should do and lift me from this ocean of distress. Now, Devaki because she also loves Krishna. And love has these two aspects. You want the other person to be happy. You want the person to speak. You want to serve that person. And naturally, you want to be with that person. You love someone. You're attracted to them. You want to please them. And that love, it's like a magnet. It draws you. You want to be with that person. So the resonance of Gorkha, Mother Devaki, such a tragedy. All her children were killed. And the only sons that survived, well, that was something she knew directly, was Krishna, because Balaram was transferred to the room of Rohini. So her only son, was taken by her husband and brought to Mathura, apparently under the foster care of Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yasoda. And then when Krishna was apparently 11 years old, then they finally, after 11 years, they finally got to be with their son. And their son was Krishna. Their son was all attractive. So naturally, there was so much love for that son. And now Krishna is asking Uddhava, tell me what I should do. Tell me what I should do. So Devaki, being a little bit worried that Krishna may leave, it's just even a slight image of how beautiful is that Krishna. Where love is embodied in beauty to please the world. Just like Radha has the full capacity to please Krishna, and therefore she's a manifestation of all beauty to offer to Krishna. She's an embodiment of the highest intensity. Krishna should be pleased, and therefore she's an offering of beauty to Krishna out of love. And Krishna reciprocates with everyone, and his beauty is also, he's also very beautiful, in a mood of pleasing the world. Krishna is for the world. God, ultimate reality, just what a wonderful concept of the ultimate reality. The ultimate reality is a loving object that is perfect, that we have a relationship with. That's the ultimate reality. Reality is beautiful. The ultimate reality is the most beautiful person inside and out. That's the eternal, real, closest, and most dear object of love. Devaki did not want to lose Krishna. Krishna, 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 Krishna. Everyone is attracted to Krishna. When Krishna comes to the forest of Vrindavan, he blows his flute, he gives joy to the forest of Vrindavan, and it's an attraction to Krishna, because he's all attractive. His being is alluring. His being is the embodiment of beauty. There's a natural, intense attraction to Krishna. Our souls are attracted to God, like an iron is attracted to a magnet. But now we're covered with a covering of false conception that manifests into the material elements that blocks that attraction. And by Chaito Dharpanam Marjanam, by chanting the holy names of God, by meditating on the absolute reality, the anarthisko, those things that are unwanted, that have no value to our relationship with God, and like it becomes quenched, and our natural attraction awakens to Krishna. So Devaki is intentionally attracted to Krishna in a motherly way, mixed a little bit with Aishwarya, but opulence. She has some cognizance of Krishna's greatness, but ultimately she's motherly. So she doesn't want Krishna to go. So she makes a proposal. You should give your best well-wishers whatever they want. Give them whatever they want, meaning pay them off. Pay them off. Give them whatever they want. Send them some jewels. Send them some money. Make them happy in another way. Yes, their anxiety should be relieved, but you should give them whatever they want. Now, Padmavati is wife of Ugrasena. And Ugrasena is the king. So she's really fearful now that when Devaki says to Krishna, give him whatever you want, Krishna will say, okay, I declare to the residents of Dwarka they can have my kingdom fully. So now we're in today's verse, and what she's arguing is, don't give the kingdom, you know, make a monetary payment. If they may want the kingdom, just figure it out. Get Gargamuni. Gargamuni is an astrologer. They are expert in calculations, and they're also they're poor. They're villagers. They have their wealth is cow. What do they need money for? You know, something. And by saying this, she's also hoping that somehow or other distract Krishna from just blurting out, yes, go to them, we'll offer them the kingdom. So Padmavati doesn't want that. So she says, just give them calculate. Gargamuni will calculate. Now in the purport here, a very interesting thing happens is Vyad Bhagavatamrita says 11 years, that Krishna lived 11 years. And what is known about Krishna is that basically he leaves Vrindavan in his prime. Basically in his prime. And the prime is Kaishor. Krishna has three ages. First age is Kumar. And to facilitate love, as we also understand that devotion is enjoyed in a variety of ways. It's not just some ecstatic meditation, but there's exchanges of love. And love is churned. And it has emotional components. And this churning dynamicism of churning of love and Krishna reciprocating to those who love him in an appropriate way. So he appears as a child, that's Kumar. That's before the age of five. And that invokes a sense of love for those who wish to love Krishna in that way. A sense of love that I am your maintainer, I am your protector. Because you're in need of protection and love, and therefore Krishna as the object of love in Vatsalya Ras is a young child who is in need. And that's the Bhav. And it's a wonderful flow of prema motherly sense of love, which is reflected here in quite a selfless way, but not to the extent, of course, of the ultimate reality. It's a selfless type of love, such a beautiful thing. Basically, that's what people want. People want perfect relationships more than anything else. That's what people are searching for. Therefore, people are actually searching for Krishna. Because the perfect relationship has to be eternal. The perfect relationship has to be real. And in the perfect relationship, you're always eternally able to live within that relationship. Before I give my classes outside, I generally now begin with something just to set the tone and theme of the class. I learned this from one scholar in New York. I went to his class, famous scholar. I went to the first part of the class. And he was speaking on Yoga Sutras. And he said, the qualification for entering this class is you have to answer no to at least one of the following three questions. Have you found what you're looking for? Is it eternal? So someone technically may say, yes, I'm looking for God, I found Jesus. And is it eternal? Yes, and it's also eternal. So far they answered yes, but they can't enter the class unless there's no. The final question is, can you always be with it? Can you always be cognizant of it? Can you always focus on it? If you say yes, then what are you sitting in a class for? To get knowledge. You don't need knowledge. You've already achieved everything you want. What are you hearing for? So, Krishna, for us, that's what we want. We want, what do we want? We want a perfect relationship. And we want that relationship eternally, and we don't want to be a minute without it. So that's the concept of the spiritual world, where this perfection is fulfilled. And so Krishna, at the age of five, appears as a young child, before five, to be the object of that type of love. And I found what I'm looking for. I want to be a mother. And I want to be the mother of an eternal child. I want to be the mother of a perfect child. I want that child to be eternal. And I always want to be with that child. That's Kumar. You have that, you don't need to hear classes. Or you hear classes in another way. You don't hear classes to get knowledge to improve yourself. You get classes because it's part of living. You're hearing about the object of your love, and it's one of the main ways in which you always live or dwell in relationship with the object of your love. Jiva Goswami says that you can read and hear two ways. One is to come to the point of surrender, to accept the absolute reality and accept the will of the absolute reality and really have an intense desire to just do what the absolute reality wants. See, absolute reality is inclusive of everything. It's the most beneficial thing that can be done. The desire of the absolute reality, the most beneficial thing that can be done. So, dwelling in the absolute reality. And then there's Poganda, 6 to 10, perfect sense of friendship, perfect sense of intimacy and equality. And then a little bit more maturity is required, bodily maturity, to appreciate the conjugal relationship as the perfect object of eternal love. So here, this point is that Krishna left at 11, which begins Kishore. The maturity begins that allows one to legitimately appreciate that love. But that the perfection of that age is towards the end, which is the full blooming of mature beauty. So here, they're trying to figure out how much to pay. So she said they were there 11 years. So then the question was it only 11 years? Was it a little bit longer? And then it's very nice in the purport, they go to different verses that support that. 11 years. 3.2.26, thereafter fearing Kamsa, Krishna's father, brought Krishna to the cow pastures of Mathura, of Maharaj Nanda. And there Krishna lived for 11 years, like a covered flame with his elder brother. And then they were young adolescents. It's described in the 10th canto. What Akura saw, what did Akura see when he came? You see, it's described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that the object of love requires a different form. So in childhood, the object of love, to really have motherly love, you know, it's better that the object of your love doesn't shave. It's mature. What's the object of motherly love? You know, little baby fat is good. And friendship is one thing, but conjugal love, there's some maturity there. So in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it describes what is the body of God look like in the various ages to perfectly reciprocate the particular mood of love that the devotee eternally holds within his heart. He saw Krishna and Balaram in the village of Braj going to milk the cows. Krishna wore yellow garments. Akura drives in his chariot, and what did he see? He's Krishna. He's going to milk the cows. He has yellow garments, and Balaram has blue, and their eyes resembled Uttamo, lotuses. The two shelters of the gods were in their Kishore age. One of them was dark blue complexion, and the other was white. And definitely Krishna was in Kishore. And then, when the lords arrived in Mathura, the women of the city described them also as adolescents. The two professional wrestlers have limbs as strong as lightning bolts and bodies resembling mighty mountains. What comparison can there be between those wrestlers and these two immature boys with exceedingly tender limbs? So it appears it's exceedingly tender limbs, especially Krishna's limbs are described as he reaches maturity. So they're very tender. They're not yet muscular, adult. So it appears that he's 11 years old. And it's generally understood that Kshatriyas are supposed to receive their sacred thread in the 11th year. And Krishna and Balaram, they took initiation right after they killed Kamsa. So this is also supporting that it was 11 years. And then after Kamsa's death, Krishna told his mother and father, because of us, your two sons, you always remained in anxiety and could never enjoy our childhood, our boyhood, our youth. So, but they were coming at the prime of their youth, so how can it be possible that Devaki didn't enjoy? And it said because somehow Krishna grew up fast. Because he had to come, he was just a cowherd boy. He's going through the fields of Braja. And so beautifully, he's playing his flute. And when he's playing his flute, sometimes he has to tune his flute to the right pitch. And he's thinking how to do that. And then the bees come. And the bees buzz in the perfect pitch. And then Krishna tunes his flute and then tells the bees. So that's very, very good. So he was just tending the cows, the best occupation in the world is cow protection. Why? Because other occupations entail such work. Just like a Vaishya, the Vaishya has four occupations. One is banking. One is trading. So much anxiety, so much calculation. One is agriculture. You have to plant seeds, you wait for the rain, you have to harvest. But cow protection is you just take the cows out. It's going on parikram every day in Vrindavan. You just take the cows out, and they what do? You play your flute, you play with your friends, you drink water, you play catch. The cows come, the Govardhan Hill, in ecstasy and separation from Krishna begins to cry. The rivers are flowing down, the cows take the water, the Govardhan Hill in ecstasy, the hairs on Govardhan's body stand up, and Krishna and the cow and the hares come out. Govardhan is very nourishing, it's green, and they take the cows, and they go to Krishna Sarovara, and they go back. They're herding the cows. It's very easy. Very easy. So youthful, beautiful. But now Krishna has to grow up. He goes to his with his father, and then all of a sudden, as a Kshatriya, he gets his first battle with Vidura and Mushtika. So it said the heroic prowess perhaps covered the natural form of youth. Just like sometimes we see that there's a young child and he wants to enjoy his childhood and be carefree. But then the father dies. Because the father dies, the son has to work. Sometimes we see 11-year-old boy, they lose their youth. They never had their youth because they... And sometimes it's very admirable. You see sometimes how spoiled in America children can get sometimes. You know, I read this one article by this college president, and he did a study, and he said, what a waste of time junior and senior years in high school are. It just prolonged the children's youth. They're already 16 and 17. It prolongs their youth, they're not engaged, and they just live a frivolous, irresponsible life, and they're not Krishna. And it's very painful to see teenagers in America grow up. And so he made a thing, he said that they should end high school after the sophomore year, and then there should be 2 years of trade school. Children should learn music or dance or crafts or mechanics or something. Then they can go to college. So that's the opposite. The opposite is people never grow up. And therefore, in America, you see the phenomena that people get married later just to delay, just to prolong their youth. They sometimes wait in that way. Some people do it for that reason. But then you see the other hand, you see a very young person at the age of 12, 11 in India running a store or doing, they mature. And it's very attractive, but their youth is lost. So here the argument was made, well, how can they not enjoy their youth because Krishna had to grow up? But then they give an alternate explanation. An alternate explanation that Krishna actually in Vrindavan, he stayed there till he was 15 or 14. And the reference is given is the poetry of Pithamangala Thakur, which gives evidence that in some of the later pastimes before leaving Vrindavan, Krishna manifested full-grown youth, even like an adult. And it's especially attractive because at that age, the body reaches the peak of its youthful beauty. But because Krishna was supremely gentle by nature, his 15th year seemed to be like young. Sometimes we see that a gentle person could look younger. Right? What is it? It's a New Jersey joke, but I don't know if I can even tell the whole joke. But one guy grew up in Jersey told me when they played the football team at Lodi, and I don't want to say what LODI stands for, but a place, and he just was shocked. He was just a young kid, and he looked there, and like, you know, it's like almost full-grown man with 5 o'clock shadow. So some people mature more. So Krishna didn't mature like that. So beautiful, he remained as gentle. Well, of course, that could be the peak of beauty. But he remained that gentle beauty. And therefore, it seemed at the beginning. So anyway, the point is, Padmavati, the wife of Ugrasena, does not want Krishna to, when Devaki and her heartful plea to Krishna, oh yes, you have great souls, Nanda Maharaj. You can give them whatever you want. And then Padmavati said, well, not the kingdom. Just give them some money. And calculate. They stayed for 11 years. How much do you owe them? Pritchett said, now you have to understand, you know, Pritchett is listening to this. And when he's listening to this, he's listening to this with an open heart of love. He's a Mahabhagavat. From his very youth, he was attracted to Krishna spontaneously. He saw Krishna in the womb. And seeing Krishna in the womb made the deepest impression in his consciousness that he wanted the object that created that impression for his whole life. Youth is impressionable. And impressionable means that that whatever you experience creates a very strong desire at that time. That's why parents want to protect their children when they're young. Not only protect their children, but give them some scars. When a child is young, I was actually seeing, you know, really nice Gauravani. He has a son, Kirtan. And the boy goes to all the kirtans because he's with his father and he's just walking around. And I was just thinking, what a fortunate child. What is the impression in his consciousness for devotional music at such a young age? And because that impression is there, that's what that child will search for the rest of their lives. And how unfortunate if there's another experience when one's young. of Parikshit, he had the experience of Krishna. Right from the womb, when Krishna came into his womb, he had the experience of Krishna. And therefore, he was Parikshit, he was the examiner. He was searching for Krishna always. Although the personality of Godhead must have heard these words, he pretended he had not, because he didn't want to hear Padmavati pay them off. That's so painful. I love them. And how would they feel? I'm sorry I'm not coming home, but here's some money. In fact, that happened initially. Krishna sent with Nanda Maharaj. Initially, he sent some jewelry and some things for them. And when they got it, they were so pained. And then Nanda Maharaj had to think very quickly, and he said, no. Krishna's coming back. Just wear this. He just said he just wanted to give you a gift out of love. He's coming back. So they wore the jewelry and the gifts that Krishna gave them, and they were so feeling, oh, Krishna's coming back. So Krishna, he knew what the Vrajrasis required, what they wanted. So then he's actually going to speak. But we're not going to have time for that. But I should say one thing is the next class, I've been actually, because I'm here in my place, I have my books, it's been nice. I was preparing this a little bit ahead. In the morning after I chant japa, I do some half-hour prayerful reading. And whenever there's a cross-reference, I like to look it up. So there was this reference of Krishna saying, I shall return. He said that to the gopis. He said, I shall return. Because he saw they were so distressed. And Sukadev says, with love, Krishna, Suprema, with love, he said, I shall return. He also told that to Nanda Maharaj, tell them I shall return. And the commentators go on, and certain commentators go on, they say these verses, they're not prema. Because how Krishna is not going back to Vrindavan, how is that satisfy prema? That's not prema. He's not going back to Vrindavan. That's not prema. And Nanda Maharaj is leaving. So where's Nanda Maharaj's prema? So they analyze these verses. Krishna goes back. Nanda goes back without Krishna. That is not prema. So Jiva goes, Swami. We'll do this next time. It's very interesting. He analyzes these statements and reconciles them with prema. And the only way he can reconcile them with prema is to explain that by Yoga Maya, Krishna had two forms. And the residents of Vrindavan had two forms, one that stayed and one that went back. And he explained why Krishna had to stay for Leela and why Krishna had to leave for Leela. The only explanation is that, and he looked at the verses, that they actually mean two, they actually say two different things. Anyway, that's another thing. Anyone like to ask a question or say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. It's Hanan.
Hare Krishna. Thank you.
I have a question, but I'd like to take a few seconds to clarify the question. I notice in my own life, the question is about how important is our relationship in this world with other people compared to our relationship with Krishna. And I noticed the first years I started to practice Krishna consciousness, I was more focused on God realization and good sadhana. And I find myself in the last few years more focusing in learning how to communicate with people and try to learn how to deal compassionately. So I guess my question is, how important is to learn how to have good relationship with people? Although we know it's a temporary relationship, is it a practice for our learning to have relationship with Krishna? Or I guess I'd just like to hear a little bit more about it.
Yeah, well, I think there's many platforms. One is spiritual and one is psychological. Well, jiva doi krishnanam, I mean compassion for others. But in terms of just ordinary relationships, you know, a devotee, you know, has relationships with others. That's what a Madhya Madhikari is. It's defined in terms of relationships. It's time of friendship. It's how to relate with those that are junior, and it also, you know, and so devotees' relationships, bhunte bhojyate chaiva. The nice thing about bhakti is there's six types of relationships. And then we have relationships that are, in one sense, let's say, I just want to make this point clear, that in terms of those type of relationships that we have, you know, a devotee relates to everyone in love. You know, so I guess your question is what about temporary relationships? Do we try to transcend those feelings? The first point is we can't transcend those feelings because it's artificial. So those feelings are there naturally anyway. And they're healthy feelings for one to develop, just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you know, mentioned that grihasthas should give charity. And, you know, otherwise they can become hard-hearted. You know, and the heart, the open heart is necessary for bhakti. But, I mean, at the highest platform, you know, at the platform of prema, for example, or something like that, then, you know, one can become detached from even ordinary relationships. On the mundane platform, it doesn't mean that they're detached from people. They still have relationships, but it's no longer simply on the platform of the body. You know, it's more like on the platform of the soul. You know, and one becomes detached in that. So I guess I'm just trying to really focus in on your question. I think if one artificially tries to transcend this world, you know, and become like a yogi, you know, artificially, it won't work. And it's also not healthy psychologically for a person, because the relationships that we form are also part of our psychology. You know, if we have bad relationships with people, you know, say parents or things like that, those relationships affect our mind in one sense. Those relationships are very connected with the mind. So I don't think people artificially give up relationships. I think it's because they're necessary and they are connected to our whole personality, our heart. Our heart has to be exercised to love Krishna also, you know. So it's just that we don't act simply on the basis of those relationships. We act on the basis of the highest dharma, savai pumso paro dharma, the highest activity of the Krishna. And things are also in relationship to that. So sometimes a relationship that we have may not be so favorable. You know, it may be pushing us away from Krishna. You know, we have to see that. So I think it just takes intelligence to see what relationship, you know, how to relate in an appropriate way to satisfy ourselves psychologically and make our minds peaceful, and also to nurture and culture our heart, which is required to be soft and pliable in devotional service.
Yes, yes. Thank you, Maharaj. It's a very deep answer. Can I ask you one more thing?
No, please, because I'm not sure yet I focused completely on your question, but go ahead.
It's just while you spoke, you made the distinction between psychological and spiritual. And
yeah.
Is it our level of spirituality that make the difference if the relationship is psychological or spiritual? Like if someone is advanced spiritually, all his relationship are spiritual because he see God in everyone, or what makes the distinction, our level of spirituality?
Well, yeah, I think certainly on the highest, you person can become, it's in the Bhagavad, can become entangled in family life, right? It means that the relationships are devoid of the connection with Krishna. And therefore, you have to be very, very careful in the relationships we have not to be hard-hearted, and to be compassionate and to care for people and to exchange in the proper way. I think that's important. But I think at the same time, you have to be careful not to let those relationships take one away from Krishna. Someone just wrote me recently, they've come to Krishna consciousness, right? Maybe if I put into an example, I think it would be very, very clear. I think a person came to Krishna consciousness and their families are supported, but none of the family is devotees. And they come from a cultured family and a loving family. Now they're becoming very interested in Krishna consciousness, and it's disturbing all the social obligations they have. The family want, it's almost like described like taking away oxygen. Because the family, the relatives demand so much time, and demand so much time in their world. So that's there too. That there's more detachment from it. My ultimate relationship is not you're my mother and father, and therefore I love you, and I should do whatever I can to please you. But doing what I can to please you is taking me away from Krishna. And doing what I can to please you has nothing to do with who you are ultimately either. So that's one side of the coin, which is also legitimate, that we'd have to that. If you make those the object, to satisfy those people, because that's what a relationship means, love, I should satisfy them. And satisfying them means satisfying their desires, which have nothing to do with Krishna, with nothing to do who they are, ultimately. And, and suffocating you in your spiritual life, too. But on the other hand, the other thing is just, okay, I'm not the body, they're not my parents. And then someone goes the other way, and then they just leave those relationships, which are relationships that are supportive, psychologically nurturing, et cetera, and supportive in other ways, and also necessary for their development, So I think to push it on one side or the other, in an intermediate platform, to push it on one side or another, will have deleterious effects. If your mind is not strong enough to say a little bit, well, no, I at least in your mind, have a community, I have another life, and it's a relationship with God, and this is not the ultimate goal, and to what extent they can understand. I mean, I go through that in one sense. I have, my mother's still alive. I have certain parameters and boundaries, I don't go to certain functions, but I don't neglect them either. you know, in one sense. And basically they understand something that I have other commitments and they accept it. But it's kind of, I'm thinking it through. So I would say the thing is that there's psychological needs, there's spiritual needs, there's social needs. To reject it completely, you know, for spiritual, you may neglect certain social and psychological needs. To surrender to that relationship completely, you may sacrifice some of the spiritual needs. Hopefully, the relationship is such that it can be a balance that, you know, you can put into it and nurture the needs one has in one's heart. It's just like the same thing with, in Bhagavatam mentioned, sense gratification. You know, you enjoy, you live, you don't live to enjoy, you enjoy to live. Kamasya nindriya prithya labhojivendiyavita. You know, you don't live to eat, you eat to live. So I think it's the same thing with the relationship. They're required, and they have a function. And they have a function even in relationship to the soul, according to your conditioning. And, you know, because the psychological and social is the needs that we have. But there's an amount that you need, and it's not the goal of life. And I think sometimes, especially in relationship to family, that they're expecting that in Jewish families, which I'm from, you know, that this is the goal of life. You know, this temporary relationship is the goal of life, and if you enter into a relationship with me, you have to live in that world, you know. But it's not the goal of life, you know what I'm saying? So there's a balance. Go ahead.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Maharaj. Both of us are laughing me into it because it's so familiar to us. Yeah, thank you so much. It's really helped my understanding. It's a healthy balance, and there are three different things.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for asking the question, because I felt at the end I kind of got the answer. It takes some time to think because it's subtle. Thank you. And thank you for both being on this Sunday. Anybody else like to comment or make a question? Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. It was nice hearing in this discourse.
Yeah. You know, I know that in India sometimes the devotees who were born in India and come to America, one thing they like, they know if they lived in India, that practically 50% of their time would be spent at social functions, at weddings, you know. There's so many social functions, you don't have time for Krishna sometimes. Maybe in some states. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hari Bol, Maharaj, Chaitanya Priya.
Yes, thank you. Great. You're still living in Seattle?
In Portland.
Portland. Okay, thank you.
Portland, Oregon.
Thank you. Great. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Govardhan.
Hi. Hi, Gol. I'll be coming to New Jersey at Boat Key Shores, I think in 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. Thank you. 3 weeks. Okay, anybody else like to say hello? Okay, Vanchikopa Trubya Shakipa Singhavi, the Chapati.